Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert.
Louis Cato, tonight, what an honor. Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein are here. Woodward and Bernstein are here tonight. We're going to break it down. And just we're talking about Watergate in just a moment here. I just want to throw a little plug in for a guest we had here a couple of weeks ago. We had Julia Roberts on, who is producing and starring in Gaslit over on the Starz network, I believe. If you haven't seen it, it's about Watergate. Yeah. It's about Watergate. It's amazing. She plays Martha Mitchell. She plays Martha Mitchell. Sean Penn is an amazing John Mitchell, Attorney General for Nixon. Dan Stevens is John Dean, and Betty Gilpin is amazing as Mo Dean. I'm not getting paid extra for this, right?
No.
This is just purely from the heart. It's a great series. Go check it out. All right. Woo. Now,
I will.
They could pay me if they wanted. Folks, if you're enjoying the January 6th hearings, fun fact, this Friday happens to be the 50th anniversary of the Watergate break-in. In June of 1972, my guests tonight, reporters Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, began reporting in the Washington Post one of the biggest political stories in American history, the break-in and bugging of the Democratic National Headquarters at the Watergate Hotel, aided by their secret FBI source, Mark Felt, a.k.a. Deep Throat, named, of course, after the infamous 1970s porn film, Mark Felt. Their reporting linked the crime to President Richard Nixon, and soon after, the Watergate Committee was established, holding 51 sessions televised gavel to gavel, and which produced a slew of the 1970s equivalent of viral moments that changed public opinion. Like when committee vice chairman, Republican Senator Howard Baker, asked this now famous question.
What did the president know, and when did he know it?
As opposed to today, when it's, who did the president text, and why was it Sean Hannity? The committee compelled explosive testimony from insiders like former White House counsel John Dean, who testified that Nixon himself orchestrated the cover-up and ordered the FBI not to investigate it. It was stunning for the president to be sold out by a member of his inner circle. It would be like the January 6th committee hearing testimony from a 12-piece bucket. But the biggest bombshell was the revelation that Nixon had a tape recorder in the Oval Office that captured the whole cover-up. A bombshell that Nixon's one-time deputy assistant, Alexander Butterfield, dropped very reluctantly.
Mr. Butterfield, are you aware of the installation of any listening devices in the Oval Office of the President?
I was aware of listening devices. Yes, sir.
Damn. That is the pause of a kid who knows Dad has the goods. Tyler, are you aware of any pornography sites in my work laptop's browser history? I am aware of those sites. Yes, sir. Nixon ordered the tapes withheld. Then he ordered the tapes destroyed. But thanks to the work of the committee, he was ordered by the Supreme Court to turn them over, and they were loaded with evidence of him incriminating himself. So, pro tip, if you're ever committing a crime against the United States, remember, do not record yourself doing crimes. The Watergate hearings had a massive impact. From the day they began to the day Nixon resigned, the number of Americans who thought Nixon should be removed from office jumped from 19% to 57%. The only case ever made more persuasively on television is the one curtailing the Real Housewives' legal access to white wine. The process worked exactly as it should 50 years ago, So I hope the January 6th committee follows the example they set in 1973, right down to forcing all the witnesses to enter the chamber via Soul Train dance line. When we come back, we'll talk to the reporters who broke the Watergate story 50 years ago, Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
My guests tonight are Pulitzer Prize-winning titans of journalism who've been reporting for over 50 years. Combined, they've written 25 books, including their latest titles, Peril and Chasing History. Please welcome the truly legendary Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein. Gentlemen, thank you both for being here. I've interviewed both of you individually. This is the first time I've seen you in, you know, in full form, the two of you together, bring the band back together here. You're here because not only is this Friday the 50th anniversary of the Watergate break-in, but you have a new 50th anniversary edition of All the President's Men right there, your classic book, on the Watergate scandal. And it says, with a new foreword on what Watergate means today, I'll bite. What does Watergate mean to us today? Have you been watching the hearings?
Yeah. I mean, obsessively. I think they're great hearings. Mm-hmm. I think it not only tells you what happened, but at the center of this is, who is Donald Trump? And Donald Trump is somebody... You've got to make a tough judgment. But he did all of these things. And it is a crime in the simplest definition to try to subvert the legitimate function of government. And this is to certify on January 6th who's president. If they don't do that, we don't have a precedent. I mean, if Pence...
Or a democracy.
If Pence had just walked off... and said, oh, sorry, never mind. I'm sorry, that's another show. And then what would have happened? And so the stakes couldn't be higher.
No, that's right.
Carl, what do you think, what do we learn from Watergate that's applicable today?
Well, first of all, Richard Nixon was a criminal president who tried to undermine the very basis of our democracy, the electoral system. And then you have Donald Trump, who also tried to undermine the electoral system, but went farther. He staged a coup to prevent the peaceful transfer of power to the duly elected successor, Joe Biden, who was elected fairly and freely. And then we have, in his coup attempt, the first seditious president of the United States. Imagine a president who attempts to inspire an insurrection at the Capitol building to shut down an election. The president of the United States has to be elected by the electors with the vice president presiding at 1 p.m. on January 6th. If they can't fulfill that function, then you're into chaos, maybe martial law. We had a coup staged by a president, the likes of which you see in juntas, the likes of which you see in authoritarian regimes all over the world.
In the new foreword to All the President's Men, it compares the former president to Nixon. What do you gentlemen see as the starkest similarities between Nixon and Trump?
An obsession with hating the opposition. Nixon said so famously the day he resigned, we'll never forget this. I mean, he's giving this speech. He's leaving the presidency, something he worked all of his life to get. And he says, quote, always remember, others may hate you, but that those who hate you don't win unless you hate them. And then you destroy yourself. It's the hating that eats away at you. Trump is the same way. I was in 2020 down at Mar-a-Lago interviewing him, and he had a video of himself giving the State of the Union address, but he put in various Democrats, and they're just kind of sitting there, and Trump's right behind me. I thought he was going to bite me in the neck. He said, see it? It's hate. It's hate. And there's no doubt that a lot of these people hate him and he hates them, but this accelerated sense of, you know, they are after me. I mean, Bernie Sanders, there was a clip of Bernie Sanders. I said, see the hate? And, you know, Bernie's just sitting there.
It's projection. Yeah, it's a little bit of projection. Yeah. We have to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hey, everybody. We're back here with the authors of the newly released, updated All the President's Men, Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward. You talk about hate and the hate that the former president might have for the people he feels do not constantly praise him, let's say. But I've also heard, Carl, I know you said this, that behind closed doors, that Republicans in Washington just detest the former president, but they won't say it because they're frightened of his base. What was that like with Nixon? Was there a respect for Nixon, or did the Republicans at the time really want to get rid of him?
They were respectful of him. Most Republicans followed his policies, liked his policies, supported him pretty wholeheartedly. The difference here, you know, I did this story for CNN, both in print and on the air, that said that 21 Republican members of the Senate despise Trump, disdain him, and then I got a call the next day from a former Republican senator who called me and said, Carl, the number is really closer to 40. And here you have, and only two of the ones I named all 21 of them, only two did anything like denying what I had written. But I had gotten this from members of the staff of each of these senators. And then you look at how craven these people in the Senate are to go along with Trumpism, to go along with authoritarianism, to go along with what Trump has done to undermine democracy. One of our two political parties has been captured by these forces.
Yeah. And they're just not coming clean.
And that's right.
Part of the problem in our politics is there's not enough transparency. People are not saying how they feel. One of the things that struck me very much is a remark that we reported on that Gina Haspel, who was Trump's CIA director. Now, she is a tough lady, somebody who watched waterboarding and so forth. And so after about a week after the election, which Trump lost, we know from all the empirical evidence, he fired his defense secretary, Mark Esper, who very well-respected person, and Gina Haspel calls up General Milley and she says, you know, this is insanity. We are experiencing a right-wing coup. Trump is acting like a six-year-old with a tantrum. Now, we've heard some CIA directors say some nasty things about presidents. Mm-hmm. A six-year-old with a you remember when you were a six-year-old? I do. And
sure. You got a better memory than I do.
Yeah, I want a balloon. I want a balloon. I want a balloon. I want a balloon. I want a balloon.
You know, give it to me. Yeah, let it rip. Yeah. Let it rip.
Okay, so eventually, the Republican senators in 1974, led by Goldwater, once they'd heard the tapes, right? Once they'd heard the tapes, they marched over to the White House and said, "You got to go because we're going to vote to impeach you. We're not on your side anymore." Is that how it went down, essentially?
You know, we wrote a book called The Final Days about Nixon's last year in office. So we went to see Barry Goldwater, the 1964 nominee of his party for president. We went up to his apartment. He poured himself a big tumbler of whiskey, pulled out his
one
diary.
One for you and one for me also. Don't leave that out.
Okay.
But Goldwater was such this figure.
Yeah, he was considered really by that time a kind of conscience of the Republican Party. He pulls out this diary and starts reading to us about how he took a group of leaders from the Senate and the House, the Republican leadership, to the Oval Office. Nixon sitting across from him. Nixon fully expecting Goldwater to tell him that he's probably got enough votes to prevail and not be convicted in a Senate trial. So Nixon says, "Barry, how many votes do I have in the Senate for acquittal?" Goldwater looks at him and says, "Mr. President, maybe 4, maybe 6, and you don't have mine." And the next day, Richard Nixon went on television and announced he was going to resign. That is the difference between the Republicans in Congress today and then.
I remember it. August 8th, August 9th was the resignation, 1974. Can I suggest another difference is that Nixon, on these tapes, in secret, there were secret recordings of him admitting to be part of these crimes, whereas with the former president, the tapes aren't secret. He said it out loud.
Absolutely.
In front of everybody multiple times and for years leading up to the event that he wouldn't accept the results.
That's right.
Is there something about the shamelessness of that that prevents the members of his party from doing the right thing in public when they are secretly hoping the right thing happens?
But there's something intervening here. It's called the Constitution and the law.
I've heard
and
good things.
You've heard about these things.
Yeah.
Sometimes you think Trump has not.
Quaint.
Because they are very, very clear that there are certain obligations. For instance, the day before January 6th and on January 6th, Trump talks to Pence, his vice president. Now, Pence is the one who's going to be leading the Congress in certifying who's going to be the next president. And he berates Pence. He said, "You know, I'm not going to be your friend anymore if you don't do this. If you don't do this, you are betraying us. You are finished. Your life, you know, your political life is over." I mean, it is rumored, but not authenticated, that Trump said to him, "And I'm not going to invite you to my birthday party down in Mar-a-Lago." But if you look at this, it is a crime if somebody tries to get somebody to do something illegal.
Well, the reporting was that Pence said, "I don't have the power to make you president of the United States." And Trump said, "But wouldn't it be cool if you did?"
And he did use the word cool.
Wouldn't it be cool?
Right. But he really thought that he could overwhelm both the law and his vice president. And in this case, this Republican stood his ground and said, "You cannot do this, Mr. President. I won't do your bidding."
We have to take another break, but when I come back, I will ask Bob and Carl about their thoughts on the future of American democracy. Stick around.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey everybody, we're back with the authors of the 50th anniversary edition of All the President's Men, Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein. 50 years ago, here you are, you two gentlemen, right there. Young reporters. And I'm curious, as briefly as you can, how is it the two of you ended up being the ones on this story? Were you put on the story? Did it happen randomly? Why is it the two of you who were there to cover this particular break-in that turned out to be this tectonic event?
It was a Saturday morning, and I was in my apartment asleep, and the city editor said, "It's the most beautiful day in Washington ever. Who would be dumb enough to come in and work?" And they immediately thought of me.
And Carl?
I was working on another story that didn't seem as good to me as what was going on in City Desk about a break-in at the Democratic National Committee. I put aside my story and said to the city editor, "You know, I think I'll make some calls." And I did, and that was it.
Well, it's been 50 years. Right place, right time. And it's been 50 years this Friday, and it was a great scandal. America, because of the functioning of the Senate at the time and the investigation and the party, the Republican Party doing the right thing, avoided a moment of great peril for the United States then. We've just had another moment of great peril. We're in another moment of great peril, as you say in your book, Peril. What is your feeling about the future of this experiment we call American democracy?
Well, first of all, I mean, during 50 years ago, we had Katharine Graham, who was the publisher owner of the Washington Post. And I remember early on having lunch with her in her dining room at the Washington Post, lunch. And, you know, and we had this discussion, and I said, I don't know what's going to happen in Watergate. And she said, "When is the truth going to come out?" And I said, "I need to be honest with you. Never." And she turned to me and she grabbed my arm and said, "Don't tell me never." Okay. Get to work.
There's another aspect to Katharine Graham. A little while after this, the guard down at the door at the Washington Post called me and said, "There's a subpoena server here to get your notes from the Republican National Committee." And I said, "Well, keep them down there." And I went to Ben Bradley, the great editor of the Washington Post, told him there was this subpoena server, and he said, "Make sure he stays down there. I'm going to go talk to Katharine." Went up to Katharine Graham's office, came back down, and I still get emotional when I talk about this. Came back downstairs, came over to my desk and said, "Katharine says they're not your notes, they're her notes. And if anybody's going to go to jail, it's going to be her." It's one of the great moments in journalism history.
And so what Bradley said, he would... Bradley had the great ability to find a moment. He said, "Oh, just think of it. Katharine's limousine pulls up to the women's detention center, and they take a picture." And Ben said, "That is a picture that will run on the front page of every newspaper, not just in this country, but the world."
Well, I am going to take from what the two of you just said is that there is hope as long as the truth is still pursued.
Okay.
Yes? Yes?
If people are looking and open-minded themselves, the people themselves in this country, if they're open to the truth, absolutely. And it's a big question we need to answer. Are the people of this country open to the truth?
And I believe they are. And right. I think we have got to do more hard work and find out the I mean, what the January 6th committee, I mean, I really want to give them a lot of credit. They had detail, they had testimony. There was no ambiguity in what they presented.
Well, we have to go away for a commercial, but we'll be right back with more Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward, everybody.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're here with Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward, author of the 50th anniversary edition of All the President's Men. So you broke this story 50 years ago. You're still breaking stories having to do with Watergate. Please tell the story that you guys have just revealed about Martha Mitchell calling you up in 1974 with a scoop.
You did a phone call, and I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Other
oh,
part.
Yes. Oh, so I'm in the office, and the phone rings, and it's Martha Mitchell, who I know. I've interviewed her, and she actually
wife of
went
the Attorney General under Nixon. For people who don't know.
Went and literally and complained about the smokestack in Georgetown that was putting. Why the hell is my cell phone going off now?
Is your cell phone going off right now?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Martha Mitchell.
Maybe it's Martha. Martha.
Yes. Martha Mitchell. Yes.
Okay. So she calls and she said, and this is 1974, 75. And I mean, it was one of those calls. She said, so John has left me.
Actually, she said, the son of a bitch has left me.
Yeah.
Yes,
that's right.
So John
that's
Mitchell,
right.
Former Attorney
and
General.
She said, now, can you and Mr. Bernstein, always right. called you this, come up here and, you know, you can go through his stuff in his office.
She was just going to let you into his home office.
Absolutely. Yeah. We got on a plane right then, straight to the airport.
No, we checked the lawyers.
That's it. First we called a lawyer.
Yeah, and the lawyers said, and we said, can we do this? And they said, that, you know, the lawyers are great. They said, well, this is constructive abandonment. Just like leaving it on the street corner
sure,
with
sure.
your trash.
Yes.
And so...
So we get up there, and we're greeted by Martha Mitchell with a birdbath martini about like this, kind of stumbling around the living room, and all this chintz around us. And then she takes us into the study, this, you know, wood-paneled study, and she says, there it is, up there in the closet, all the books. And the closet's about 12 feet high. And so I say to Woodward, I'm climbing up there. And get a ladder, and go up there, and there's like a ledge up top, and I start handing the books down to Woodward.
And his notes.
And his checkbooks. And we got some stories out of it.
And then we decided not to disclose our source because it was the angry wife.
Sure.
And even if it's a reliable angry wife, it's not a great thing to say we got it from Martha. So John Mitchell's lawyer called and said, you got to turn this stuff back to us. And so we danced around and said, yeah, and is Mitchell's preparing for a trial and, you know, going on trial for his liberty and he should be entitled to his notes. So we... we're sitting there, what the hell do we do? Do we give all this stuff back that we went all the way to New York and Martha Mitchell blessed? And then we said to the copy aides, emergency Xeroxing.
So you'd give them back.
And they all came, and we Xeroxed everything. We gave the originals back, and we still have the document.
Did you tell them you were Xeroxing it? Bob, Carl, the 50th anniversary edition of All the President's Men is available now. Bob Woodward, Carl Bernstein, everybody. Thank you for listening to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. Just one more thing. If you want to see more of me, come to The Late Show YouTube channel for more clips and exclusives.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.